There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, ah, yeah, you are invited, ah, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy, couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
My name is Andy.
And we're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of different questions from a couple of different listeners. I'm going to tell you right now, y'all, it's Saturday night, and what we doing? Recording an intro. So you know our night's popping off.
Yes, we don't want to get into it, but we are recording from two separate rooms. I have my own brush with COVID. We'll see what happens. But if you can sense that the charisma is just slightly less from us not being next to each other, dear gentle listener, that is the reason. We are a room apart.
Well, you can speak for yourself because I can keep my charisma up. Maybe you need to be close to me so you can get some of this cast off charisma. Because you know me, I get in front of this microphone and I just turn it on, sister girl. That's what I give.
excuse me, girl. If I want to turn on the charisma... I just close my eyes, wrinkle my nose like I'm in Bewitched.
I was about to say, you're giving us a Bewitched.
Yes, that's a reference that everyone listening,
Andy,
will get.
I've always said about you, you're young, okay? You're young, you're fresh, you're fun. And this Bewitched reference is a classic example.
Look, Naomi, the breadth of my knowledge is such that I can make references from Donna Reed to Ice Spice, Naomi. Okay?
What's Ice Spice?
She's a new rapper.
Oh, see? I didn't even know. I would have said from Donna Reed to Donna Summer, and that's still dated. So I was like, I can really only give you 50s to 70s.
50s
to
70s.
That's the MGM bringing to the table as a young, hip person.
You're a classic rock station of a human being.
Absolutely. That's me. That's what people have said about me for years. It's so funny. So, you know, I do the Lifetime podcast. Listener, Andy knows, but listener, I do a Lifetime podcast, and I had to watch a movie this morning, and like a very early line that one actor says to another, a teacher says to a high school student, she says, "It's a shame more people don't know how nice and smart you are."
Man.
Which I thought was the most insulting thing you could ever say to somebody.
Yeah, that's like, that is some pedagogical shade right there.
I was like, I think that line of dialogue is meant to tell us that the student is shy, but I think it really just comes off like this teacher is like, too bad you have no friends. Also, this teacher is played by Vivica Fox. So that adds another layer of fun to the whole thing.
Vivica A. Fox?
Vivica A. Fox.
Okay. Just wanted to check to make sure we were talking about the same person.
Oh, no, absolutely. You should. Ooh, Angie, can I tell everybody about our exciting new thing we're going to do?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, so sure.
Well, you guys... On Sunday, February 12th, 7 p.m. Eastern, Andy and I will be part of the Ask Rana 3rd Annual Carriage House Lonely Hearts Live Show. Okay? We love it. Well, you know I'm an Ask Rana stan. You know Brian Safi is my nemesis. But at the same time, we are friends and I wish him the best. Okay? But the Ask Rana Live Show, it's online. You can watch it from the comfort of home. It's going to be games, trivia, fun. Me and Andy are doing a bit. We don't know what it is yet, but it will be delightful. So if you have any interest, you should definitely come through. If you go to askranalive.com, you can get tickets. But again, it's online too. So it's like, who doesn't love? What I love is like being in my house. You don't even know if I'm wearing pants or not. Okay, when I'm doing myself a Zoom show, I'm out here just loosey-goosey, but I'm having the time of my life.
Naomi, you're not going to get us fired. I was going to say canceled, but it's that...
No, fired. No, right.
Fired.
No,
you're not going to get us fired like that guy from The Believer or the guy
from... I know,
from
I shouldn't joke. I'm always
wearing
pants.
The New Yorker.
I know.
What is it with highbrow literary magazines and their editors or whoever's having to do Zooms with their pants off?
I have no idea. I will say I can barely do a Zoom without a bra. Like something about like I need to be pantsed. I need to be underwired because it helps get me in work mode.
Sure.
It says to me, you got to focus. You're ready. This is a real thing. If I come in a little too, if I'm swinging too much, if I'm Winnie the Poohing and swinging, nothing's getting done.
I'm going to tell you, Naomi, that's the couples therapy difference. We come to these Zooms with energy. We come to these Zooms with bras and pants on. Okay.
Yep,
other people just casually walking onto this, flipping their computer open and being like, oh, what am I doing? All right. Hey, what's going on? Hey, guys. You and me.
Yep.
No matter what. All right. I have been living in anxiety. And yet, the minute we flip that switch, what am I doing, Naomi? I'm giving you energy. I'm giving you charisma.
Okay. Yes, Miss Carpenter. That's what I'm calling you. That's how much charisma you got. I'm calling you Charisma Carpenter, a.k.a. Cordelia Chase, a hot Buffy reference. Yes, I'm young and fun.
Hey, now you made it.
That's what I'm trying to do.
You made a reference in the 90s. All right, you're getting up there.
90s and early aughts.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so I'm getting closer.
Well, no. Hold on. Because Buffy season 7 is what, 2003?
Yeah, early aughts.
You're maybe, because that means that when she left, which was season 4, to go to Angel.
Well, she's still Charisma Carpenter in Angel.
You think she did
in
the
Angel,
show?
Angel, what? Doesn't Angel last us till 2006 or 7?
Yes. Do you think she'd be on couples therapy?
Absolutely not. I'm going to tell you that right now. Absolutely not. I don't think so. And that's just my gut instinct. And I think that's totally fine.
Charisma, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on.
Charisma, are you there? Are you listening?
Naomi, can I tell you one thing that a listener sent to us?
Absolutely.
Do you remember, it was either last episode or the episode before, we talked about how, you know, we've got calcium stains in our toilet.
Why did you even bring that up? I don't remember that, but I sure as shit know that if you had brought that up, I was like, please let this hoe cut that out. But no. Yeah, you brought up calcium stains in our toilet. Continue.
Well, a listener said, if calcium stains are the same thing as hard water stains, which is what they get, then they sent us a link to a pumice stone toilet cleaner.
Wow.
I just want to, if anyone's living the life we're living, where we are ashamed to have people over because there are stains that have nothing to do with what you would think.
Right. It has nothing to do with the body. It has nothing to do with the body.
No, these are supernatural stains that come from the water in Los Angeles. Heavy with calcium. Maybe that's what hard water is. I don't know. I didn't do any research before this. I was too busy looking up masks and shit. So I can't tell you. But I can tell you that if calcium stains are hard water stains, we might have a solution. And we don't have to keep putting in crazy corrosive chemicals into the toilet every couple months and having to call the super. Is that what you call that person? The super? I mean, they're the superintendent. I guess you shorten it to super. They're not that super.
Right. The regular.
Yeah.
The regular.
They should be called the regular intendant.
Very nice, capable, but regular.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey,
absolutely.
This is my, I'm auditioning to be Jerry Seinfeld's understudy.
Honestly, that's really good. I mean, I was thinking, it's funny because I was saying something very silly yesterday and I was like, I am not a comedian who can make that a bit. This is a bit for like a goofy white boy. Like there are certain things where I'm like, that's not what you want to hear from me. And I'm like, how do I put some of my own stank on it? Like, I have basic ideas all the time, but I'm never like, I should say this on stage. And that's what separates me from a lot of silly people.
Naomi, say the premise at least.
Okay, so what happened was, and I'm still going to use it, but a couple days ago, Andy and I, we were walking Mabel, and he was like walking, and basically we were splitting off in two directions because I was going to go meet somebody. So Andy's got Mabel, and when she did her little business, I grabbed the poop because, you know, she's pulling left and right. And I was like, I got it. You know, I got a bag. I got poop bags in every pocket of everything I own. So I grabbed her poop. Then we separate. And then I'm walking and I realize I am holding a bag of dog poop, but I no longer have a dog with me. And I was just thinking about how it's like poop without a dog is a very different individual. The person who has a bag of animal feces but no animal begs a lot of questions. You're like, is this person a collector? Are they a kook? I'm concerned. I'm worried. I'm triggered.
Is that dog feces?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. When you got feces but no animal, you've obviously bagged it. And then the question is, where are you taking it? What are you doing? Because when you have a dog with you, you just look like a conscientious person.
Yeah.
And you're holding, you're walking. But if you don't have the dog with you, now you're like, who's that creep?
Right. Is that yours? Did you go around a corner into an alleyway and exactly. just quickly, you
am
know?
I picking it up? Am I, you know what it reminds me of? If you guys ever watched the American version of Getting On, where Laurie Metcalf's character is doing a fecal study and the whole time she keeps being like, save me that feces. And so it had real fecal study energy to it. Me just carrying this. And then I just kept looking around for a garbage can so I could hurry up and discard it. Cause I was dressed kind of nice. And so you're like, why is this nicely dressed lady who's clearly on a mission holding a bag of poop?
Naomi, would you not marry me if I started a band called Fecal Study?
I would still marry you, but I wouldn't let people know. I wouldn't let people know. It would be secret. It would be a secret. But you know what I do want to let people know about, Andy? I want to let them know about today's guest.
Yes, that's what I was assuming you were going for. And I love that segue. Who is our guest today, Naomi?
Today, our guest is the inimitable. I said it. Rachel Bloom. We're talking writer. We're talking actor. We're talking comedian. You know her from her show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She's also a star of the new show Reboot on Hulu. Rachel is out here doing the work, being a kind soul, really rolling with the fact that I was like kind of rude at one point, and then I tried to dig us out of it, and I think we were okay and ultimately got to a good place, but I was like, I think this might be coming off a little more aggressive than I mean.
Oh,
but anyway,
yeah.
She really was great about it.
Naomi, Rachel is a mensch. I'm sure she did not take offense at anything, and it was real. You know, she's an improviser, so she rolled with everything, and this is a delight. You know, we're huge fans of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, so
yeah, and we go way back, so it's just been interesting because I feel like this was the longest conversation we've had since seeing her in LA, right? Because we knew her in the New York days, then she moved out here pretty early, and then we've only reconnected with her through friends in recent months. So
yes,
it was fun to get into it.
We've seen her a couple times through friends at various events.
And, you know, that's how we do. If we see you out, we'll be like, do the podcast. So, you know, you got to be careful if you see us out because we will make you do it. Anyway.
But we will not, charisma, if you are listening to this, if we run into you, we will not ask you then. We're not uncouth. We are not gauche.
Right. You wait till later.
We will send you an email a couple weeks later.
Right. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
So without any further ado, our friend Rachel, roll it. Rachel, can I start with an embarrassing anecdote?
Yeah.
The last time we saw you at Latke Fest, and I was asking you something about your past.
What fest?
Latke Fest.
Oh, Latke Fest. Well, I would hardly call that a festival, my friend.
No.
That was a restaurant that had three latke cooks who were overwhelmed, and the waiter, as you recall, was like, the service is going to be bad, and you're just going to have to deal with it. You're never going to see me again. I'm going to get your drink order one time. If you want anything else, you're not getting it.
Yes.
But yes, I saw you at Latke Fest. I'm excited. Yes. I don't remember. This is a testament to how bad my boundaries are, because I don't remember you asking me anything embarrassing or personal.
Yes. Well, first fest, yes, way overshot. Yeah. It was
strong
a latke
strong
sad
the word
child's
fest.
Birthday party. It was a latke birthday party where no one showed up.
If it had been a child's birthday party, the child would have been sad.
Yes. 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 It would have been at the one like when my parents had one at Chuck E. Cheese and then it shut down and they had to scramble to find a new place for my birthday party when I was like six or something. It turned out fine. I think we ended up at Showbiz Pizza. Anyway, the point is, I was asking you something about growing up Jewish, something like that, and I said, "Oh well, you grew up on Long Island, obviously," And then you're like, no, I grew up out here. And then everything flooded into it. It's a real testament to like what knowledge is and how we understand knowledge. Mm. Because I was I remember listening to you on WTF and knowing about your past. And I realized I had confused your character on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, a show name, and our couple show, with you, the actual human being. And it was so embarrassing because I'm like, I'm in this industry. I should not confuse an actual human being and the character they play because I understand the different levels that we're all on.
I don't think that's embarrassing at all, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I wrote the show, and I think it's assumed any character that comes from, you know, a creator actor is going to closely mirror, if not exactly mirror, that person.
No one
thinks I'm from here. Everyone thinks that I'm from the East Coast. Some people say the Pacific Northwest. Nobody says here. And frankly, when I go home to Manhattan Beach, which is where I'm from, which is a beach town.
This is insane to me.
30 minutes south here. No,
me hearing that you're from California is really throwing me right now.
It makes no sense to me either. I walk around and I'm like, I do not belong here. I can't believe I was here. It still doesn't make sense to me. And I always was like, I am meant to be on the East Coast. My grandfather's from the East Coast. And I spent a lot of time with him, and he had a thick Brooklyn accent. My father's from Boston. My mother's from here, but speaks like a New Yorker, weirdly. And so I was like, I'm meant to be on the East Coast. And when I went to school in New York, I remember having this feeling of, yes, I was correct. And the fact that I'm back here now, at the very least, I'm in a place that has a lot of New York transplants. It feels, you know, the Silver Lake Echo Park area feels Brooklyn-y. But the South Bay is... I still can't believe it. It's really, it's weird.
I mean, I didn't know that, Andy. You didn't even tell me about this incident, this embarrassing moment that's been haunting you for weeks.
Oh, now I remember you were so embarrassed, and I was like, it's really, I can lean into it and shame you if you want to add.
No, Rachel.
I pride myself on being savvy, and so to slip up in such a way. Really? You know what? My identity, I had this identity about myself. I thought I knew who I was. And then to be revealed as a rube, I just fell off the turnip truck into Hollywood.
I will say, I think that's a big thing of yours, Andy. This idea of rube falling off the turnip truck. I think you have a lot of baggage around being from Reading, Pennsylvania. And I think you really are trying to shake your Pennsylvania roots.
Well, yeah. Well, when you met me, Naomi, remember I was chewing on a piece of straw.
Yep, and you were chewing on straw.
But that's an insecurity of yours that you're like, oh, I'm still from nowhere, Pennsylvania. I'm still not with it. People know I'm not with it.
No, I think. I mean, it goes deeper than that. It's really more it's not about Pennsylvania at all. It's more about like my entire identity when I was a kid was based on being a good student. And being like top of my class. And so all of my Pavlovian kind of feelings are based on like, but I did good, right? I did a smart thing. I said a smart thing, right? Right? Where's my gold star, everyone? Mm-hmm. So to make any kind of error at all. Let alone this kind of metatextual.
Oh, wow. Metatextual error.
Error.
Yeah. Well, show business stuff is really weird, too, because the level, and I think this is maybe more of an LA problem than a New York problem, but the line between getting to know someone for just wanting to be their friend and the line between getting to know someone because, oh, maybe we'll collaborate together someday, it's really, really fine. And I'm thinking about this a lot because I just went to the Critics' Choice Awards 2 days ago, and I was nominated for my show. And I didn't get a plus one, which means I didn't bring my husband. And
Wait, hold on. Sorry. You're the star of Reboot. You did not.
None of us got a plus one.
Not even Paul Reiser?
No. Not even Reiser. None of us got a plus one except for Keegan, who was nominated. They only have so much room, and it's fine. But what I found interesting was usually when I go to fancy events, I'm there with my husband. And my husband and I have been together for almost 15 years, and... throughout all of the craziness, especially the first year of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend when I won a Golden Globe, and it happened kind of very suddenly, and I was, you know, 28 or whatever. It was nice to have this person who I've been with forever to look at, to make eye contact with. And then when people said crazy shit, totally. no one's mean, but mm-hmm. but people are, when it comes to meeting actors, there are a lot of, I suspect personality disorders going on. Well intentioned, but yeah. And so it's nice to be able to look at my husband and like make eye contact and just ground myself. But this award show, mm-hmm. I didn't have him. And so there were certain things that happened where I was like, oh my God, did I just make a fool of myself? And he wasn't uh-huh. there to say, no, you're fine.
Yeah.
This is done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I think that I wonder if you'd be beating yourself up if I were your ophthalmologist as opposed to someone else in the industry. I don't know. It's also weird because you're like, you just feel like anyone you meet, you have to say, I'm a fan, even though you've never seen their show or whatever.
Oh, God, no. Like, I don't say that at all, Rachel. Rachel, okay, I don't say that at all.
That's good. That's
Rachel,
good.
My whole thing, this is the thing, and I think, I don't know if it's because from doing stand-up, but there's something about stand-up that really kind of strips away, at least for me internally, the artifice of stuff, like where I'm just kind of like, you know what, you probably cried in the bathroom today too. That's like how I see everybody. I'm like, everybody is sick and suffering, and so
that is also to, for the record, everyone pisses and shits, and we're all made of guts. I think that I fear I'm a people pleaser. How much does the people pleaser in you interact with the site? Like, I know everyone who's in this industry, it's, why are you broken? That's my first question. Something, and my writing partner said the other day, we're all dented cans.
Mm.
But yeah. But I also don't want, it's more that I know people's egos are very fragile.
Right.
And so I don't want to set someone off.
Uh-huh.
How much does that
uh-huh.
interact with the stand-up part of you that's like, whatever, I don't fucking care?
Well, I think the thing is, like, I am still trying to be nice. I still want you to like me, right?
Yeah.
Because I think what can be so tricky now, what I've found in moving here, the phrase I love you has lost all meaning, right? Because how many times is it like, they love you. Oh my God, they love you. You know what I mean? Like, an agent's like, oh my God, they love you. And it's like, literally means nothing. So that's why that's not what I would lead with. Like, unless it is somebody where, yeah. like, usually I'll yes. talk to them a little yes. bit and then I'll reveal I'm obsessed. If it's like that. Or like, when I see somebody, I'm like, I need you to know I am into everything you do, is what I'll say. And then I'll kind of leave. Because it's more like that sense of not wanting to put pressure on a person, right? Like, I don't want you to think you have to perform for me. I don't want you to think you have to, like, do the thing. So I'll try to keep it, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, that, I think. Because as I start to be on the receiving end of that in very small ways and small levels, I do feel like when someone is really effusive, I'm like, okay, what do I give them back now?
Yeah, I think that's also what it is you... Is that's a really good, what do I give them back? There's a pressure to match energy. If someone has an energy that you don't have, I feel sometimes not code switching. I feel like I need to suddenly give them back. I either give them back actory energy or I become even more reserved. I don't know. It's all weird. And I've always said, I think this even more, anyone who's at a fancy award show and thinks, yes, this is me, this is natural, I deserve to be here, is a psychopath. And so either the way it manifests in people is people are super normal and it's actually thrilling to have normal conversations. And since becoming a parent, I find sometimes at fancy things, it's really nice to talk to other people about schools. Where are you sending your kid to school? What do you know about the magnet schools and charter schools? It's actually really grounding. So that's one type of conversation. And then the second is dealing with people who it's a very weird, frenetic conversation because they're not assholes, but they're, you know, terrified to be there. It's weird.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But everyone is dealing with the weirdness of being at an unnatural event differently.
In an unnatural town.
Yeah. And it's what I think is interesting is there isn't a sin. I don't find that anyone is sinister. Mm-hmm. I don't run into people who are like, yeah, this is my town. Again, unless they're a psychopath. It's more that everyone has a little bit of an imposter syndrome because these things are so incredibly fancy and the pomp and circumstance is so blown out. No one knows really what to do with their hands. Mm-hmm. and everyone is kind of in different ways dealing with the bizarreness of the whole thing. And I think that when I run into writers or comedians, our conversations are much more shooting the shit. And I think that it's much emotionally harder to be an actor, to be mm-hmm. just an actor, because it means you, even if your shit isn't getting made, when you're a writer, you get to pitch stuff. There's a certain amount of agency that you feel like you get to have, or as a stand-up. There's something that is yours, and I feel that with people who are auditioning or waiting for offers, of course they have agency over the roles when they get them, but there is a certain lack of power.
You're waiting to be, yeah.
I think that drives people insane in a way that you don't have to deal with if you are a writer.
Yes, this is a town that is held together by a bunch of different mental illnesses, just kind of like that's the patchwork of
right
Los Angeles.
Well, it's connected by freeways, Andy. It's connected by freeways. Mental illnesses are joined.
Mental illnesses connected by the 405. But can I go a little deeper? Can you take compliments at all?
Yes.
Okay.
I've learned. I've gotten a lot better and I take them well. But I always assume at all times nobody knows who I am or has heard of me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And because I think I was on a cult TV show, it is the type of thing where either you know me or you don't. So I'm used to both sides of the coin. I'm used to, for the most part, people not giving a shit or knowing me. And then occasionally someone, when they know me, they fucking know me. Because they're like, oh, I've watched
it. Yeah, they're in, right.
So there's a kind of, but I don't have any, I don't know. I try not to have any sort of don't you know who I am-ness, because that is always going to lead to disappointment.
I don't know. I think you should do that all the time. I think no matter where you are, you should be like, don't you know who I am?
Don't you know who I am? But I'm saying it to like a bird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, literally, whatever. Yeah. Animal.
Don't you know who I am,
human,
bird?
Statue.
One of the things I really enjoy doing as an interviewer, a conversationalist, I like to really put my guests on their heels, Rachel Bloom.
Yeah.
I like to tell them what I think of them.
You're like a Z-Way.
Wow. Okay. So much younger than me, and yet I'm compared to her. That brings me to my point, Rachel. Now, Rachel, I'll say this about you, okay? Because you mentioned being 28 when you were on the Globe.
I was 29. I was 29.
Okay, cool. Listen to me. So you and I were in Improv 301 together.
501.
Was it 501?
Wait,
Gavin?
I remember being at that show.
No. Gavin's feeling.
I will stake my entire fortune on this. Rachel's right, though.
This is New York, right?
Yeah, it had to be three.
It was Gavin's 301. Oh, my God.
It could not have been.
Andy, listen to me. I'm going to tell you my life, okay, Andrew? Because 401 was the class with me and 14 white dudes.
Yes, and then
I never
a 501
did,
after that.
I never fucked with a 501 because I said, I'm done here.
You are 100% wrong. You are both what? 100% wrong because I remember, Naomi, that is, I went to that show because I was infatuated with you.
Creep. Wait.
I remember it.
Wait a second. I can look this up on my email.
It was a class show, and I think it was had to be Gavin's
I will
class.
Stake.
Gavin's.
Okay, Andy. Okay, well, Rachel's gonna get us answers right now.
Oh yeah. Okay,
and
hold
what
on.
What was this? If you
oh look at this, ma'am. When I look up Gavin Spieler on my email, and I go early. First of all, there's my submission for a mod team. Hi, this is from December 28th, 2012. Hi, I'd like to audition for a mod team. Below is my information. Oh, here we go. UCB class info. I've taken all improv levels through advanced study. Teachers are 101 Shannon O'Neill, 201 Anthony King, 301 Charlie Todd, 401 Gavin Spieler, New York. So that was the 401.
So that was the 401?
It couldn't have been because Naomi's 401 was her and 14 creepy white dudes.
Look, all I'm saying is I think on December 28th, 2012, I knew my improv history.
You knew your history.
And I'm telling you right now, Gavin Spieler, 401, was in New York. And then that was the last improv class I took in New York before I did Will McLaughlin's class in L.A.
Well, listen to me, because this is what gets me to my thing. Because yeah. I'll tell you this. So while Andy's, you know, spitting out in his head of thinking, oh, I'm a rube, I didn't know where Rachel was from, something you said to me at Latke Fest, used really inappropriately by the venue. You know, you mentioned your mom being like an overbearing kind of a character. Yeah, and I'm saying that's a light way to put it, and you'll tell us however much you want to tell us.
Sure, yeah. But yeah. Yeah, my hackles are raised, but we'll but no, keep you don't going. Have
to. But I found it surprising because in my head, you know, you were like one of the first people in the world of comedy, because I will say it wasn't until I got to UCB and got in this world where people I was in class with were doing like, oh, I'd be flipping channels and I'd see somebody from class, you know, like in a commercial or doing a TV show or something, that it suddenly felt real to me. And it felt attainable. And then it felt like, okay, if it's attainable and I'm not getting it, something's wrong with me. Listen, I'm going somewhere. And then you had that Ray Bradbury song. And next thing I know, you in LA and got a TV show. And I understand that's the fast way of putting it now that I'm in the business. But I remember like you were one of the first people where I was like, oh, I know this person. And like, meaning like I've sat with her and like been in a class working, right? And now she's doing the thing. And in my mind, it was like, and what made me think of that is when you were asking, when Andy asked you if you could take compliments and you said yes very quickly. Because in my mind, I was like, oh, this is a white girl who was like, she grew up rich and everybody told her she was great all the time. And not in a bad way as much as like, oh, she grew up in a happy home. She grew up in a home where they were like, you're a star, you're perfect, never change. Mm. Keep doing everything. And then, of course, she gets a Golden Globe before she's 30, because that's what happens when everyone tells you you're perfect. Mm. And look, I love Crazy Ex Girlfriend. This is not me. But I just thought, you know, I associate youth success in youth with people told you you could do it, which is why you did it. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that's what I mean by that. And so it was very interesting when we were talking, where you mentioned, I was like, huh, she got mama drama? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, you know? And so that's what brings us, you know, because couples therapy, you know, we can talk about the Critics' Choice Awards all day, but that's not what Andy's here for.
Of course.
Andy says, let's get into your heart and soul. And so do I. And so I'm like, okay, she comes from mama drama, but she's out here. She's booked, busy, blessed. Also, your girl auditioned for Reboot. Your part. And when I read it, I go, this ain't me. This is supposed to be a white girl who real anxious. And then when you did it, I said, absolutely. This is the booking. This is what checks out to me. And I was like, should I even read? Anyway, continue.
Oh, boy. I love this.
There's a lot here to unpack.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an onslaught.
I know, but Rachel can take, you know, she comes from comedy.
Well, I will say the way I talk about My family is evolving and exploratory, because my parents Google me and they listen to a lot of things.
Mm,
and they are quite supportive of my art. They are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is never a question. They were always supportive of my art. So the trepidation you hear is me weighing pros and cons in my head in the moment of what to say, what not to say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Here's what I'll say. I grew up upper middle class, 100%. I went to public school, but it was a good public school community. I'm Jewish, and so there was always an otherness that I felt growing up where I did. However, it's hard to separate how much of that was being Jewish and how much of that was me being weird. So something,
Andy,
something that,
Rachel, that's Andy. So my something exact that conundrum.
So something that greatly informs me my life is that I was really made fun of my whole life, but it got really, really bad in middle school, around sixth, seventh grade. That was also the time that I had developed what I now realize was some form of OCD. And I started to have these intense, intrusive thoughts. I was wearing sweatpants to school all day. I was wearing like baggy clothes. I started cutting my own hair randomly. I was really made fun of, and it, which the climax of that was in seventh grade. There was a school-wide prank to pay a popular kid to ask me out, like as a big prank.
No.
Yeah.
No, like a movie?
Yeah, like a movie.
Like TV. Are you fucking kidding me?
And it was so trite and lame, and I kind of saw it coming, but it even hurt at the time.
Yeah.
I was a weird kid who liked musical theater, and I'll say this, I was a weird kid with weird parents. We did not fit in Manhattan Beach at all. The one thing, and then I would say complicated relationship with my parents.
Okay.
Some highs. I will say they have always supported me as an artist. I'll just say there were some highs and there have been some lows. Again, always evolving the way I talk.
Yeah.
But the one thing I kind of always told myself, so there was a, I had very up and down self-esteem. And, you know, yes, sure, I saw I'm upper middle class, but it was also in a school where there were really, really, really rich kids. Mm-hmm, so and my family, frankly, didn't live, I always got to go to acting classes and stuff. And so that's a product of having money. But we went to Chili's, the Olive Garden. We didn't do fancy shit. And so the kids who were popular, who were also rich, who lived by the beach, I never associated with them, right? So I never felt like rich and privileged, whatever that means.
By the way, Chili's, very underrated mozzarella sticks.
I really love Chili's. And Olive Garden remains one of my favorite restaurants. The one thing, so I had very up and down self-esteem for many, many reasons. You know, there's depression in there. There's undiagnosed, what I now know, ADHD, which overlaps a lot with OCD. I began to kind of say to myself, okay, well, at least I have musical theater. And all of these people are making fun of me, but they don't have music. They haven't been working hard at musical theater. And I don't have time to get invited to parties because I'm doing classes in Torrance at the Professional School for the Arts. And so it was this story I told myself. Basically, my entire self-worth became wrapped up in my talent. And it was this intense fear of failure because if I were to fail, well, I'm not popular because of anything else and I don't really like myself because of anything else. So if I'm not talented, if I don't get the lead, I have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I am my ability.
Yeah.
And I got to college and, you know, I knew in my head that I'd be in college with people who were more talented than I was, but actually facing it, it was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of started,
we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
NYU,
and I kind of started to slack off a little. In my head, I started to slack off. I also had very bad time management skills. I was getting very little sleep. I just have bad time management skills. And I joined this sketch group. And for the first time, because I hadn't said to myself for my whole life, I want to be a sketch comedian, it was the first thing that I tried hard at that wasn't wrapped up in my self-worth. And that's why I fell in love with doing comedy. So the answer of you know, how did Crazy Ex-Girlfriend happen? I mean, I had this urge to prove myself and combine musical theater stuff and the musical stuff and comedy. To combine the thing that I'd identified with my whole life and the new thing that I like felt fresh and I really, really loved. And I didn't see a lot of people doing music videos. And so I just started doing them. And I think that I found a thing that not a lot of other people were doing. And then I got, not discovered, but I created a show with Aline Brosh McKenna, who wrote The Fucking Devil Wears Prada. She's 20 years my senior. She's wildly successful. That's just if I'd walked into a room alone with the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend pitch, it would have not gone the way that it did. So, but you know, it's interesting what you bring up because there's a lot of talk about Nepo babies right now, obviously. And I'm not a Nepo baby. My father's a healthcare lawyer. I have no connection to the entertainment industry, despite the fact I grew up near it. I have no connections. I knew nothing about it. What's a healthcare lawyer? He was a lawyer for HMOs. Yeah, so, you know, yeah. He loves the law. Loves the law. So I have no connection to the entertainment industry, and getting an agent always seemed like, how am I going to do this? It seemed very unattainable to me. But what I will say is, I went to school. I got a BFA. I had no student loans. I had extra money to pay for the music videos that got. I didn't have a lot of money.
They had production value.
I mean, Fuck Me Ray Bradbury was, I think, $3,000 to make. I had $3,000 from these savings that my parents had given me. So am I a Nepo baby? Not. Am I someone who was fortunate enough to go to a school with connections and then have the money to make high production music videos? 100%. And I could also take UCB classes. I waited tables, but I mean, I was barely making rent. I was terrible with money and I was barely making rent, but I used my savings money. I didn't use it towards rent. I basically used it towards these music videos.
But wait, can I interrupt you for a second? I just want to go into like the emotional stuff. Because like, I think that's where I'm like, you know, your identity is wrapped up in this stuff, right?
Yeah.
At what point, or did you decouple that?
Oh, that's good. Yes. When do we decouple? Because I have not decoupled, which is why the failure hurts.
It's really hard. It's really fucking hard. And I'm still on that journey. And I don't know if I'll ever fully decouple. I will say, acting in something that I didn't write, my identity is much less wrapped up in that than something like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, where I wrote it, where I'm working for 16 hours a day.
But you still don't think like you're the kid that no one's inviting to. Like, that's what I guess what I'm curious about. I sometimes
have that feeling. A huge thing that helped is when I went on Prozac, and I realized, oh, I've been also kind of chronically feeling left out. Well, first of all, I had very bad PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Like, without Prozac, my cycles, I would go into like a deep depression probably 1 week out of the month. And with that came these feelings of, like, I remember being with friends and being like, I'm not included in this conversation and I feel left out. When I went on Prozac and my psychiatrist explained to me, yeah, you actually just have chemically lower serotonin. When I felt that baseline of serotonin get up, I was like, oh. When I think about how I used to feel a lot of the month compared to now, it's pretty shocking. Yeah. And so I think that all of that mental health stuff helps give you some perspective, right? And especially when I went into regular therapy, when I went on Prozac and really made mental health a priority, it was the first time I'd even thought about how much am I making my career and my talent, you know, synonymous with my self-worth. It's helped that I've had the same partner and a supportive partner for almost 15 years. He's also in this industry, so he also, you know, obviously has issues with or struggles with the question of how much is my self-worth wrapped up in what I do. And and I think our self-worth is necessarily kind of wrapped up in what we do because we're creative and it's a part of who we are. And now that I'm a parent, there's somebody who loves me and doesn't care, doesn't really know what I do. So that has helped with a healthy separation of keeping everything in perspective. But on the other hand, when I've been having a lot of toddler time and then I go back to writing, it feels so good because writing is a part of what I do. So it's this ongoing debate. I don't know.
Did you always want to be a parent?
No, I wasn't sure. It wasn't something I would ever said, absolutely not. But it was something that seemed so far in the future. It seemed like nebulously maybe. And then Gregor was kind of a no. He wasn't like a firm never no. But he was like, I don't know if this is something I want. And I leaned towards no. And I was like, I think this is maybe something I want, but I'm not. I'm open to not if it's for you. So it was an ongoing conversation we had until I got pregnant. We really we talked it out a lot for the 10, 11 years we were together before I got pregnant.
What was the tipping point? Where was it where you were both, where you were ambivalent and he was a no, and then you tipped over into like, yeah, let's try this?
You know, we'd been gradually talking about it. I got him to the point where he was like, yeah. We were on vacation in Italy, and
where at?
I'd
North,
said
south?
We were in Florence with some friends, and I said to him, "What if I went off the pill right now? Like, what if we just tried?" And he was like, "No."
Sounds
he was
like
no. Let's just enjoy our vacation and talk about it when we get back. And by the way, that's not how you don't go off the pill and instantly get pregnant. Like, that's not how. I didn't know anything about cycles. That's not what happens. You go off the pill and anyway. So he said, no, that day I got in a scooter accident. And I was fine, but I went to the hospital. And it was this moment of kind of like life and death. And he said to me in the hospital, he's like, I wish I'd said yes. When you said, like, should I go off the pill right now? There was something about that scooter. And again, I was fine, but I went to the hospital and there was something very scary. And I think that moment, I don't know, tipped him into, I love you so much and let's do something scary and beautiful.
Interesting.
Very.
Do you think?
But he, but again, he was okay with it like before.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Just
yeah.
That definitely tipped him into the yes. And then I will say my entire pregnancy was a ramp up to yes. and it's been a journey. And I also think seeing Mike Birbiglia's show, the new one, really, really helped him.
Mm-hmm.
And in Birbiglia's show, he talks about how he didn't really like bond with his daughter until like a year or so in. And that's not necessarily what happened with my husband. But I think there are certain guys who are just like, I'm not into newborns and infants. I don't know what this is. I don't feel the thing that I'm supposed to be feeling. And around a year and change is when a personality starts to come out. And like, I really saw my husband. You fall in love with your child. I was just watching an episode of Frasier where Frasier says that. I've been
about
on a real
Freddy?
Frasier. No, he says it to Roz when, spoiler alert, Roz is pregnant. And he's like, you fall in love with your child. And that is really true. It's the first thing. When we were doing Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, we did a lot of research on love and infatuation, and there's this term called limerence, which is the psychological term for infatuation. I never thought that I could feel platonic limerence, but that is how I feel about my child. There's an in-love quality that is platonic. I guess the closest thing is my dog, right? There's a platonic in-loveness that grows because this person becomes themselves. Your mm-hmm. child isn't born. Babies are born fundamentally premature because our heads are too big. It's like a thing where when we became bipedal, our hips narrowed, and childbirth still hasn't adjusted to that. It's why I think human childbirth is scientifically the most painful and dangerous childbirth. Because our hips are narrow and our heads are big. So babies are born kind of young. And so the first 3 months, they call it the fourth trimester, because they really still should be baking. But any more and they like completely split us open. I mean, they already kind of do. But any more and they totally split us open. So it's like your newborns don't know anything. They're like the comparing a newborn to my daughter now is like, those are just two fundamentally different people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One's just a lump. One's a lump, a
just
sweet lump, but
a
not
sweet
a personality.
Lump who doesn't
yet.
Know anything. Who's entertained by a light bulb. And then now she has a personality and a point of view. And I show her pictures of herself as a baby, and she's like, "Ha, da funny." And now she's like, "Oh, baby's cute," and I'm like, "You were just a baby, but you aren't a baby anymore." Anyway, I don't know if
Heidegger
this is on
calls
topic.
It thrownness.
But
you are just thrown into this already existing world as a nothing, as a lump.
Yeah, everyone's. I think everyone says being born is the most traumatic thing we all go through.
Oh, don't worry. Life will give you some more.
But anyway, Naomi, but going back to your question, does that answer? So
no, it does. I mean, it was interesting because, like, you know, in a way, I was really just kind of like, just like, you know, because on one hand, it's not like inside the actor studio. But yes, what it takes, I think, when you are a young person to commit that hard and to be in, you know, like sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I could have. As much as I had dreams, I wonder if I kind of needed to be a little bit older before I could go all in on this stuff, because it would have broken me too much. Do you know what I mean? But like hearing what you're saying is you as a, somebody, where you, as you said, where it's like you were so into musical theater and you were doing that shit from like, you know, middle school, you know, saying this is what I want. It does make sense to me that then, you know, once you're an adult and you're living on your own, that's where all the energy is. Like, you've got to bet on this thing.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
There
is
no alternative.
There was always that strong drive, and even when I combined comedy into it, there was a strong drive, and I would say fear of death wrapped up in all of this, of yeah. I want to make a mark. I don't want to be on my deathbed and be like, oh, I had all these dreams I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I do comes from insecurity and trauma and dealing with mental health. But to the other side, again, I was in a state where I could pursue this. Mm-hmm. And of course that speaks to a certain amount of privilege, 100%. And I think the reason people are giving Nepo babies shit is that some people who come from parents in the industry say like, but well, actually I had to work even harder. And it's like, no, because what they don't understand, and what I can tell them, is the fact that they never had to even wonder, how do I even meet an agent, which is the hardest part, that's privilege. And that's something I didn't have, right? I went to a good school, but like the idea of like, how do you get an agent? Where do you meet them? Because that's your ticket into everything.
Ooh, I remember my first job. I moved out here in 2013 for a writing job, and I was so sweaty because I was like, well, I'm here, I have a job, I should get a manager off of this, right? And it was just like every day was like sweat pouring off of me, just like, this is my only chance, and if I don't get representation from this, then that's it for me.
And well, it's horrifying. It's hard. Everything feels like if you don't have success, you are telling yourself this kind of I don't know, this E! True Hollywood Story, dated reference, but you're telling yourself like, oh, this was the moment I failed. This was mm-hmm. the downturn. This is what led to me frittering my life away. That's my story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Nepo baby discourse, this is the thing that I find interesting about it, which is like, one, what do you expect if you're born into a certain industry and you have an aptitude or a like for it, or at the very least, you want the privileges that come from being an actor or something like that. What do you want the person to do? This is I have like plenty of criticisms of our economic system and other kinds of things. But like in capitalism as it is right now, what do you expect? What do you expect Lily Rose Depp to do?
Right. Right.
If she has the opportunity to act with The Weeknd or whatever, right? Do you want her to if you were in that position, would you say no? The problem is not the Nepo babies necessarily. The problem is if you don't have an aptitude for it and you do it anyway. Or I would have a larger criticism of capitalism in general and the system as it is. And the fact that it's not it, I wish people had just said it's not a meritocracy. If you had just told me that this was not a meritocracy at the beginning, and remember, all I want was the gold stars and the pats on the head, and you just told me, no, but that's you left when you left grad school, you left the world, and even grad school was not a world of pats on the head and gold stars. It was still a world of social networking and, you know, favors based on
finding
lots
your
of
allies.
Different things.
It's all about finding your allies, and that's a very different skill than doing the work. Because quite frankly, sometimes you can find an ally who'll do the work for you, depending on your situation. And we're not so bitter, Rachel. It's more like
I think
the move to LA has changed us and differently, because it's not that we weren't pursuing it in New York, but there is a different. It doesn't have that same all-in feeling. It doesn't have that same sense that you're surrounded by it, and so then learning. I noticed for me, you know. sitting down and writing, it's the long emotional journey to sitting down and writing. Mm-hmm. That is actually the harder thing than the writing itself. And learning that I think that for me is a big, I think that is a byproduct of just living on the Hellmouth. You see what I'm saying? Like, if I wasn't on the Hellmouth, I don't know if I would need to do as much psyching myself up and talking myself through and working through whatever to like do.
If you
thing.
Were Faith instead of Buffy.
Yes. Yes. If I was Faith instead of Buffy. That's the reference. Talk about dated reference. E True Hollywood Story and Buffy. We're all young and cool. We've got to take a break so we can at least answer one question, Andy. Someone okay. needs some of Rachel's yeah. wisdom.
Okay. We're going to take Good a quick Lord. Break and we'll be back after this.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back.
Andy and I, even in two different rooms, I think we managed to sync that up. Really proud of us. Now, Rachel, look, you said you've done your therapy. You're taking your Prozac. You're on a
journey. How long have you been in therapy, Rachel?
I started on and off in college and then really went into it. I've really been like, okay, I really need to be in this seriously for about 10 years, like consistently.
A decade. A dime. She's been doing a dime in therapy.
Yeah.
This is the work. Rachel, people, they come to us. They need us, okay? They need us. And we've got to just... That's why we say open your heart, loosen your butt. Because that's... Yeah. We don't know what we're going to get. Andy, bring us our first one.
Ooh, okay,
we got a real serious one up top.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Hey, Andy and Naomi. My name is A. I'm just going to call myself A. And I have a little question for you guys. So... My boyfriend of 5 years, his dad had a heart attack and died a month ago, and he's just been really struggling and obviously grieving. And I've been trying to like be there for him and be a support system for him through everything, but I'm also like struggling right now with my own shit. Like, I'm having some health issues, and I have really bad, like, health anxiety. And he is very sexual, and, like, one of the things that really, like, calms him down and brings him joy is sex, like, through his grief. And he basically has just, like, come to expect sex every night, which, like, unfortunately, I just can't give to him all the time. And like this morning we had a talk basically about how like I'm not being like the bright light that he needs right now through everything. And I guess I just would appreciate some advice on like how to be a supportive partner to someone who's grieving while also like taking care of myself and letting him know that I'm also struggling. It's fucking hard, like, I love you guys so fucking much. I'm constantly listening, replaying episodes, but yeah, thank you so much. Okay, bye.
Oh, Oof. A, I'm so, so sorry that you're going through this. I'm so sorry, first of all, that we have to say that, that this whole sit between, you know, your boyfriend losing his father, the things you're going through personally, and then the third, which is the relationship negotiation of this, you know, it's three different things at least happening right now, and that is very hard. So let's just, like, acknowledge that and not pretend like this is not real shit. You know, I am, I don't, you know, Rachel, I'm sex negative, Andy's sex neutral. So, you know, I, the idea of having to, it's hard. I mean, I guess, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Rachel, do you have any thoughts?
What do you mean? Wait,
thoughts?
What do you mean sex negative and sex neutral? I'm fascinated.
This is, here's where it breaks down when we actually have to explain what it is. Cause I don't think we, it would start as a joke where we, like, we were positioning ourselves against everyone who was so sex positive and was out there talking about, like, eating ass and everything
Yeah.
And we were just like, I don't want to talk about any of that stuff. And Naomi was like, not only do I not want to talk about it, but I'm going to position myself totally opposite.
That it shouldn't happen.
Look, I'll tell you, too viscous. But seriously, sex is not for me my primary mode of experiencing love. And that is a sharp change from my 20s when I only knew someone liked me if they were inside me. Okay? And that has just been, like, part of my, like, that's just where I'm at, like, growth. Not that I don't enjoy it, but it's not for me the thing where I'm like, this is where love is. This is where the closeness is. That to me is not the greatest level of intimacy I can have with somebody. That's what I'll say. That's, like, where I'm saying, like, my neck, my sex neck. All right. And sex nooch, I think Andy's not nooch as much as, like, you are sex pause, but it's more like you're like, let's not talk about it. Bodies are gross. I think Andy's thing is, like, I don't want to talk about it.
I will talk about it with my wife, and that is about it. That
yeah,
is the
sure.
only person.
Yeah.
I remember I was talking to a person who was not my friend, not for any other reason, but, like, this is like 10 years ago, and they were like, oh, yeah, I like to, they were saying how they like to talk about, like, their girlfriends with their male friends and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I literally said, don't talk, no. And there's a reason why our friendship never progressed past that conversation. I'm like, you keep your intimate stuff in your pants. I don't want to know about it.
But I will say that to say that, like, certainly, yes, it's not always easy. But I think it's very important that if you do not want to have sex with your partner, you don't do it just to do it. I think so. I really think so. I think that, like, there's got to be other ways that y'all could have some fun, or that your partner got to go take care of themselves. There has to be something else, because if, you know, in grief, having sex is, like, you know, the time where it's like, I'm not thinking about this shit. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it is, I can see that, right? Like, it's a time when it's like nothing else. You're not thinking about anything else. And that's a nice respite. But if you don't physically want to have sex, I don't think you should be doing that just to give your partner the respite even. They got to go find another way to get that respite.
Yeah. I mean, well, Dan Savage talks a lot about sexual compatibility and, like, in a long-term relationship, like, if this were a long-term problem, like, is there a sexual incompatible going on? Yeah. And I think that the first thing is awareness of, like, yeah, my partner wants sex more than I do, and we know that, and this is how we make it work. This sounds almost like a short-term, not a short-term problem, but, like, it's a very immediate problem. I mean, I know that if it were me and I were in the situation, I'm so sorry again, I would just get into couples therapy and talk this out. Like, it seems like there's just, I mean, that's probably going to be that's my thoughts for many things, is just like, talk to a qualified therapist. But, like, this is a really complicated issue, and it involves grief and health issues and sexual compatibility. And, like, it just seems like something that only talking it out and being overly communicative can only be the closest thing that I can think of to a solution or an antidote.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Cause I was going to say, like, buy him a fleshlight or something. But it's not the actual act of sex that is the thing. See, I don't know if it is the that's the thing. When
you said you're not the light I need right now,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So that's my problem.
So that speaks to that's not just sex. Right. That's not just orgasm. That speaks to something deeper, which is it's not just about sex. It's she's not being hopeful and positive in the way that he needs or wants, because she's going through her own issues. Also, she's dealing with a partner who is grieving. And so I don't know, that speaks to they're both grieving right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I just don't think that you can expect another person, like, it feels a really, there's this thing that's going on in the 21st century where people, they throw other people away if they're not the exact thing they want at that moment. It feels really disposed, like, it feels like people treat other people, like, I remember there was a time when I saw some famous comedian who I won't name, but they're like, well, if this person is not a positive force in my life, I stop being friends with them. And I'm like, well, is that the, like, what if they're going through something? This idea that his girlfriend is supposed to be this light in his life is unrealistic. I'm just like, well, that's the only reason you're with her, or that's the only reason you're getting, like, I find, and maybe it's just because the caller is the one who is expressing her point of view, but I'm like, this is kind of his, obviously he's grieving, but I'm like, you can't expect that from another. You can't control another human. You can't expect them to be something. Get a dog, get something that will always be a positive force.
But this goes back to what Rachel was saying, which I do agree. Couples therapy, but then also individual therapy. And that is not saying, go talk to someone else because I can't talk to you. What it's saying is, we need all hands on deck, and we need more than just me. And I think for a lot of us, I think there's both that, which is this romantic idea that your partner's supposed to be everything to you, that we've got to, like, let go of. I think secondarily, I think for a lot of us in the last 3 years, our worlds have gotten smaller. Mm-hmm. That we have, like, for instance, like, I do think, for instance, Andy, I lean on you more than I would have probably before we were in a house together nonstop for 2 years.
Sure.
Because now, like, my default is to go to you, because that's what I did for so long. And I have to undo that default and start texting other people and calling other people. And I think even for this,
which
with his boyfriend, yes, but I'm saying, like, with his boyfriend, where it's like, you, and we've, and this is not the first, we've had another question. We've had a couple questions recently where it's like, my partner is grieving. What do I do? How can I help? And it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, I think it's about giving yourself, being of service in the moments you can be. And when you, and then, you know, encouraging that person to reach out to other people and do other things. It's about building up your arsenal in this life. Who do you go to? What do you do? What are the things that help you and make you feel better? Because your partner can't always be there. What if it's a world where your partner's, like, living abroad for 6 months, or the person is just, like, you know, away from home doing whatever? Like, you've got to be able to self-soothe and take care of yourself. And I'm not saying that you leave your boyfriend in the lurch and are like, work it out. But what you're saying is that, like, I will be there for you when I can, and when I cannot, I hope you have other people, other places, other activities that can give you some of that light. Because, yeah, you want to be taken care of, right? Because think about it. If this person's father has died, we don't know if that was their only parent. We don't know if now the other parent is not present because they're grieving, right? Like, he may be leaning on you because he's like, well, no one else can take care of me. And so what he needs to work on in this process is finding other places to be taken care of. And sometimes that's somebody you pay $50 an hour on a sliding scale. You know, I love a sliding scale, listeners. Okay. You ain't got to spend $200 to get your head right. We can find you a sliding scale situation. And again, as you said, Rachel, too, this is short term. So this could also be something where it's like, there are groups, you know, grief counseling, and a lot of that can be free. So there are places where you can go and be in a room of other people who are going through something similar to what you're going through. And then you and those people can often, after the meeting, people go get coffee, they talk, they call each other. That may be something he needs.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all I can speak to is I had an experience not like this, but I had a baby during COVID. My songwriting partner died a week after my baby was born. We were quarantining with a newborn while our house was under construction because we bought a lemon of a house. It was a really hard time. And my husband and I kind of took turns being miserable. And all I can say is we just talked about it a lot. And mm-hmm. we just talked very openly where we were at. And there was nothing that was left unsaid. And that helped us.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, though, like taking turns.
That's what it felt. It felt like we necessarily had to kind of take turns. But, yeah, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard. Yeah. It's that this is when relationships are, you know, being there and how do you deal with each other through the bad times and through the really bad times.
Right. It's like a sketch where you have multiple weird characters. Those multiple weird characters.
Naomi's not have feel, to play. Naomi doesn't like this.
No, this is a good metaphor. Hold on. The multiple. When one character is being weird, the other character can't be weird. The other character has to straight man the weird one for it to be funny. Because if you have a weird character and another weird character and they're just being weird with each other, it's just strange.
I find that there is, that's a good way of, there's a give and take with who the unusual, what the unusual thing is at any given time. But also sometimes you're both the unusual thing.
Right.
And that's when it doesn't work.
And that's when you pay someone $50 or you know.
Exactly.
Or more than $50. Or
that's what a therapist is. You pay a therapist to be the straight man in your sketch.
Jesus, I don't like these sketch analogies. You know I don't. You know I don't. But it's true.
Do you want me to make it stand up? The audience is the straight man to you.
No, I don't want it to be comedy at all. I just want it to be real life. Andy, Rachel, do you have time for another or do you have to go, baby girl? You can
I can do one more.
All right, I'm going to do, I got a short one. It's a little more fun. This comes to us from an Instagram direct message.
Anon, please.
Hi, Naomi and Andy. Huge fan of the pod and inspired by your love. I'd like to remain anonymous, please.
Oh, my God. I called it. I said anon, please, as a joke.
You should.
I would say that's most of them. I default to anonymous unless someone says they specifically want to have their name
on
the podcast.
Yeah, but I think when they say they're anonymous, I assume it's going to be some real tea spilling. I was like, ooh, you got to go off the grid for this one. But go ahead.
I have been dating someone for a few months, but in the middle of our romance, moved to Los Angeles to work in the entertainment industry.
Oh, no.
I am now in a long-distance relationship and want to try because I love this person, but can't help but think I'm delaying the inevitable. Mm. He does not work in the entertainment industry and has no reason of his own to move out here, and I am not moving back to the East Coast anytime soon. Am I a lost cause? Question mark.
Is that the whole question?
That's the whole question. Naomi, you asked for a fun one? That is the most fun. That's the most fun one. In our inbox at the moment.
So they moved to LA. Okay. And they don't want to be long distance forever. Yeah.
But they're saying they want to do long distance, but are like, is this stupid? Should I not even be trying?
Maybe they could move to Vancouver together. Where you got a little bit of the entertainment industry and then you got some other stuff, right?
Well, it's been a few months, right? They've been dating. Mm. Now, wait, have you...
Oh, they've only been dating a few... Oh, I missed that part.
It's been a few months, right? Oh. You said a few months. So that's the thing. It's not that long. But that's why I'm like, you got to give me... And see, this is the thing. I like concise, but I also like details, okay? Because you need to let us know what about this person is making you even want to try. What is making your heart sing? Also, are we DM... are we texting? Are we FaceTiming? How is it feeling when we do that? Right? Because that'll let you know if you're delaying the inevitable or not. Like, it was no good. But Rachel, were you and Dan ever long distance in your love together?
Yes, for a year. He was in LA and I was in New York. And we did frequent visits. And then I was in LA for a month of that. So, you know, it was on and off long distance. And it felt like purgatory. Long distance to me felt like, okay, we want to be together, but we knew it was temporary because I had been planning to make the move to LA.
How long had you been together at that point when he got the gig?
Little over a year. So not too long.
So pretty early. Yeah, so pretty early.
But we'd known each other for a couple years before then as friends. And yeah, this was we were long distance in 2010 and we got together.
You got together as babies then. If you said it's 15 years... That was in college?
Yeah, we started dating my senior year of college. I've been with him forever.
Wait, did you date anyone before, Dan?
Yes, I did. But a fun fact about me is I have never slept with anyone who didn't go to NYU. And I have only slept with one person who didn't go to the Tisch School of the Arts, and that one person is my husband. So just to give you a sense of the sample size.
Uh-huh. You asked to see transcripts.
Yeah, you're meeting them in Washington Square Park.
The first question was I asked to see if they were straight, Tisch. And then transcripts. We have some dramatic writing in there that helps, you know, some dramatic mm-hmm. writing program.
Sure.
But yeah, we were long distance, and there definitely was a purgatoriness to it, but maybe because I knew I was moving out, and it's hard. I mean, God, dating someone for a couple months, I don't know, but though my best friend and his husband, who have been together as long as my husband, they got together almost the same month in 2008. He and his husband they met in LA, they fell in love, and then his husband lived in Germany, and they were long distance for like a year while his then boyfriend, now husband, was in Germany, and they made it work. So I think that I think that anyone can make it work. It just depends on the relationship. Every relationship is different.
Yeah.
What was the thing that was keeping you and Dan together over that year? Like, what was it where you're like, no, I want to keep going back and visiting? And
oh, we just knew that it was, I just
you
think
knew
there
he was
a
guy.
Yeah, we had already said I love you, and yeah, I knew. I did. I just knew, and it just wouldn't... The idea of breaking up didn't even occur to us, mm-hmm. to be honest. It was like, okay, I'm moving to LA for a thing. We're going to be long distance. It just didn't... It didn't occur to us. And maybe that's a testament to where we were at in our relationship, and just knew that it was we had a great thing going on.
Well, it's always very I'm always in awe of people who knew that so young. Not that I didn't have strong feelings for people, but I was never really right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm like, so for you guys to have that feeling where you're like, this is my person, and I know this is like worth, you know, this discomfort for, you know, a little bit to be on the other side. I think, like, because I think it's so tempting, you know, when you're like, I'm young, forget it, I'll just go date someone else. Or it's like, who knows? You know, I think it's easy to tell yourself, well, I'm young, I should just go have new experiences or whatever the fuck. You know, but you guys do.
Yeah, I think for me it was also, I had had past relationships. The word relationship is strong, but I had had past relationships. And the relationship I had just come out of before him was very up and down. It was with someone who was quite emotionally cold, and I definitely was attracted to the idea of, oh, but they're not cold with me. I bring out the best in him, but he didn't bring out the best in me. So I also think I was in a, for the first time in my life, a healthy relationship, but also it felt right. Mm-hmm. But I'd known at that point what a healthy relationship was, because I had been in such an unhealthy, bad dynamic previously. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, and also it wasn't just like that. I mean, there was a part of me that knew, sure, but I wasn't saying that. I was just more saying like I love this person, and we make each other better, and there would be no reason to let distance be a factor in us breaking up.
Right. Right. Well, then I think this goes now to our writer. That's kind of the question. And again, it's been a few months. And because you didn't give me no details, I can't know, you know, is there something about this person that makes you feel like, oh, they're really great, and we have a connection that I haven't had before, or a connection that I really want to hold on to? If that's what you feel, then no, I don't think you're delaying the inevitable. You're trying to make something work with somebody who you feel a connection to. Now, if there's a part of you that is trying to keep him because there's something comforting about, like, oh, someone likes me somewhere, and I moved to a new place, and I just want to stay in the house, and I don't want to have to think about, you know what I mean? Like, that's different. Then that is, like, delaying the inevitable, right? So I think you have to assess the feelings you have for this person and, you know, what you want. Because you say, oh, he's on the East Coast, there's no reason for him. Sorry if I'm using the wrong, was it a he pronoun? I don't know. But like, they're on the East Coast, and
there's no reason for them to move out here. What's like, well, you never know. You could be that reason.
That's what I was just about to say is the reason is you. I know people who've moved to LA for the entertainment industry whose partners aren't in it and they found a job here. I know of someone who moved here and their wife is a professor and she got a job at a school here. So it depends on the job and it's only been a couple months, but a year from now you're still together. Yeah, you could be the reason.
Exactly. Yeah, there are at least six jobs in this town that are not part of the entertainment industry.
Also, you want someone who's not in the biz. I mean, my God, if you found someone not in the biz, bring them over here, please. We could use more people here who aren't trying to do it, okay?
But I will say this, though. All of our single friends in this town live in a romantic hell. So
that's true.
If there's anything to hold on to with this person on the East Coast, just cling tight.
I will never tell you to cling, but
cling
I will
tight,
say
like a baby koala clinging to its mother.
But yeah, I think you'll know the feel, and if you're FaceTiming and texting and Zooming, and that feels good, and it feels nice, and it still feels like you're part of each other's lives, even though you have a distance, then you're doing it. You're doing what you can do, and you know, and then maybe you know if he working, then he come out here for a nice long weekend or something. It can happen. And
you're putting it on yourself. Am I a lost cause? Like a relationship is two people. You wanted to move to LA for your career. You didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, you didn't do anything wrong. Ain't that the truth? So I think it's it can happen. And then also like you'll also know if it's not working, and then you call it. And then you join a softball team out here. That's what people do. You either get a yoga certification or join a softball team. That's how people process breakups. So it's fine. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. I believe it. I really do. I believe you'll be fine. Now,
Rachel.
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 Rachel. Rachel.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I felt like I explored a deep, viscous part of myself that I hadn't.
Ooh.
To use the word that you hate.
Can I just go back for a second to the very beginning? I was embarrassed in the moment. The embarrassment only carried over to today for comedic purposes.
Andrew Beckerman. Rachel, please. You know what? You have earned a rest. You've earned a hang.
Rachel, please.
Rachel, please. And you're just a real sweet lady. So
I
really appreciate
you.
Thank you. The time.
You're very sweet. You're very sweet too, and I hope that my trauma helped me be more relatable to you.
You both have mama drama, so.
Yeah, we have mama drama, but I was like, "Oh, she's one of us." Interesting. But it's also more about like it's very just interesting that the stories I've told myself about people.
Sure.
As a way to create some sort of logic in an illogical system. Or world, period. I don't mean system, I mean world.
Of course, and it's so funny because I didn't think about myself in the context of like, oh yeah, I got success quite young. And I'm sure that people who'd been in class with me were like, ugh, what the fuck? And I don't see myself that way for many reasons, but it's a good point.
Well, it's also Rachel. Just not knowing the backstory, because that's the thing. It's like, I wasn't what the fuck, but again, I just met that part, right? Like, I met you on that end of things, where it's like, I didn't know, and so I'm also just very curious.
I wasn't in LA with you. I left New York to get an agent, and you were like, I was in fucking 401 with her. Now she has a fucking show, what the fuck? Yeah.
Hold on. Andy, I want to say, as a testament to how good Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is, that was one of our couple shows.
That's very lovely.
Naomi could watch that. There are things Naomi cannot watch.
Because out of jealousy?
Yeah. Too triggered.
I get it.
Too stressful. So, yeah, I was like, this is it. Like, I was like, I adore it. That makes me very happy.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this episode made me very happy. And I hope it made you happy, listeners. And we will see you in next week.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.